Hello and welcome to Behind the Buyouts, the Deals podcast, where we sit down with pros from the world of private equity and venture capital and drill down into their deals. My name is Steve Gelsi. I'm senior writer covering private equity for The Deal. Today, we're joined by TJ Maloney. He's the chairman and CEO of Lincolnshire Management, where he's been since 1993, well before the launch of many other middle market private equity firms. TJ, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
TJ, you've got an interesting bio, including a law degree from Fordham University, and you're the 2007 recipient of the Richard J. Bennett Memorial Award presented by Fordham Law School in recognition of corporate leaders with the highest moral standards. TJ, before we get into specific deals, at Fordham, you've been a guest lecturer as well as a Columbia Business School speaker. When you talk to students about private equity, what do they want to know and what don't they know about the asset class?
Well, I think students enjoy the perspective of a practitioner. I think that learning about the anatomy of a deal from start to finish, step by step, is interesting to students. And of course, the war stories always get a few chuckles out of the student population.
Yeah, because you've kind of had to survive the great financial crisis. That must have been some interesting war stories during that time.
Yes, indeed. We were very fortunate, though. Part of it was driven by our strategy, which has been historically a value strategy. And so we had actually sold an awful lot of our portfolio companies prior to the financial crisis coming. And then after that, you know, it put us in a position to buy, although we were very cautious coming out of the gate back in that time frame.
Okay. So, you know, you're talking about an interesting time where private equity firms were under a lot of scrutiny, maybe for even causing the financial crisis, but there was never any cause found. How has the public perception around private equity changed in recent years? You've got more public pension fund money than ever before going into private equity. Yet at the same time, the public perception of private equity as job killers or job reducers seems to persist. What's the reality from your perspective?
Well, I think the reality is that 99% of the time, private equity investments are creating jobs. And it's kind of logical, right? Because you want to grow a company. And if you grow a company and grow the earnings, you're going to do better for your investors. So I think that there's a misconception, it's kind of Hollywood hype about private equity. And as long as private equity continues to deliver strong returns, I think that their voice will prevail.
You know, just talking about the current economy and the current times we're facing with COVID and the recovery, one of your portfolio companies sort of jumped out at me, Powerhouse Retail Services. It's a provider of high volume multi-site rollouts and refreshes for retailers. So this is not a sector that's been doing particularly well, but what's your view on this business? Powerhouse Retail Services just bought a company called Dentco. So give us an update on that company and what they're seeing out there.
Yeah, sure, Steve. We have to keep in mind that not all retail has been hurt. I mean, companies like Home Depot and Lowe's, Walgreens, CVS, all of whom are clients of Powerhouse, have remained open. So actually, they've done very well. In fact, they picked up over $40 million in revenue and doing enhanced cleaning for a lot of the large national chains and for installing what they call sneeze guards or sort of Lucite shields to protect goods and the folks that are shopping during this pandemic. So they've actually done very well. As for Dentco, their services are primarily, again, like Powerhouse, sort of a tech-driven, asset-light, outsource model. And most of the work they're doing is for national chains in the landscaping and snow removal category. And of course, those things are outdoors, so they've been unaffected by COVID.
It's interesting. So yeah, I mean, the retail business is really big. And I guess retail infrastructure is still a relevant business as well. So it's good to hear that Powerhouse Retail Services is keeping busy. What's your take on the current M&A market? And how do you keep from overpaying? You know, we've got private equity firms with a lot of dry powder. And how are they going to manage to put it all to work? I mean, we're in the industry, you know, there's tens of billions of dollars of dry powder. This is money that's kind of on the sidelines. It's not being spent yet. And you would think that it would lead to sky high merger and acquisition prices since private equity firms have all this money to spend.
Steve, good question. One of the things I found about private equity, it's difficult to generalize. It's still, at the end of the day, an inexact market. And so you do find opportunities out there. And we found one with a recent company that we bought last October called Schumacher, where for various reasons, you're able to buy things at very reasonable, really value-oriented prices. I think that's where experience matters. I think that deal sourcing is an important characteristic for firms. And You know, we've been in this business for 35 years, so we have a massive database. The search engines that people that are bringing deals to market use, LincolnShare usually pops up because of the 100 companies we bought, there's always one or two that fall within that particular industry. So I think sourcing is a very important way to find opportunities that are not overpriced. And then I think you have to remain disciplined. You have to have gone through numerous cycles, which we have, put you in a good position to know when you should reach and when you shouldn't.
So do you think private equity firms are allocating more resources to deal sourcing nowadays?
It's hard for me to speak for all of private equity. We've always done that. We were one of the first firms in the country that had dedicated individuals that focused exclusively on sourcing. We have all of us are responsible for sourcing, but a half dozen of us do that as our primary responsibility. So there's a lot of coverage nationally on the part of our firm. And as I say, a very large database of contacts, so we were able to reach out to brokers and finders for transactions.
And plus, you're playing in the middle market, which is kind of like the middle of the bell curve in the U.S. business environment. What dollar range of deals do you look at? And there's a large universe of companies in that range, right?
Yes. I mean, that's another benefit is we've been in the middle market for 35 years. We've never really moved away from it. It's our bread and butter. It's an area where we're comfortable and, frankly, where we're well known. We tend to focus on businesses with EBITDA between 10 and 50 million. There's certainly exceptions to that when we find an extraordinary opportunity, but that tends to be the area where we focus.
Okay, so you started your career as a lawyer. What was your journey into the world of private equity, and what can others learn from your experience?
Steve, I actually started my career at a very young age in family businesses. My dad and I had a great relationship, but it was a relationship part built around business, and I went through an apprenticeship with him in my early teens, and he had built up a number of companies in building materials and distribution, and so I worked through various aspects of those businesses in my formative years, whether it was sales or collections or engineering, quality control. Really across the spectrum. So that's how I started. And then I went to law school and then ended up applying, I think, that business background that I had to practicing law for 14 years. And then I ultimately joined one of my clients, which was LincolnShare.
That's an interesting journey. So you never know how you're going to end up in private equity. There are a fair number of lawyers that end up in private equity. I think maybe one of the most famous ones would probably be David Rubenstein from Carlyle Group. Why do you think that is? We do see, I guess most people come from finance into private equity, but some people come from law.
Yeah. And of course, sometimes there are people in finance that start in law. I think, you know, a legal education is a tremendous asset to have. And I feel really grateful that, you know, I benefit from, a very good legal education. Fordham did a great job in that regard. And it's really about being able to process and understand large volumes of information, being able to analyze that information with a critical eye, spotting the issues, resolving the issues, and being able to communicate both verbally and through writing. So I think it's a great skill set that you pick up in law school.
So you've been at LincolnShare since the 1990s, and the firm LincolnShare has made more than 100 investments. Do you have any notable examples or any favorites out there that you wanted to mention?
Sure. We've invested across many industries. But some companies which we purchased are probably better known to the general public and also kind of interesting. We've done a number of transactions in sporting goods. We owned a company called Prince Tennis Rackets, which we purchased from the Benetton family. We owned a company called Riddell Football Helmets. I think we owned that between 2001 and 2004. Then we owned another company called PADI, which stands for the Professional Association of Diving Instructors. And then finally, a company called True Sports, which was originally True Temper. And True's, I think, a very interesting story for LincolnShare because it demonstrates our capabilities. We took a business that was a manufacturer of a component for an individual sport, golf, and we really diversified the business into having a branded consumer product. So we were able to take the company which had a dominant position in steel golf shafts, had a fourth position in graphite, move it into number one in graphite. We then took the R&D capabilities of the company Graphite and translated that into hockey sticks, developed hockey sticks for ice hockey. We then purchased the premier manufacturer of high-end ice skates, a company called Scott Van Horn up in Winnipeg, added that to the business, and then organically added additional products to that We've taken that company and we've grown it in a number of areas, in lacrosse, speed skating, and now baseball. And so it's been very, very interesting to do that. We've done a number of interesting acquisitions along the way, including a company called Lefebvre, which is the premier manufacturer of equipment for ice hockey goalies. And you'll see our name on the ice in a lot of the NHL games. And then we also, on the golf side, bought a company called Aerotech, which is a very innovative product where they sort of combine graphite and steel fiber in the shafts, and also another business called Acra, which deals with the growth area of golf, which is in custom club fitting.
Wow. So True Sports, is that still a portfolio company with your firm?
Yes, it is a portfolio company.
Okay, great, great. And so that's one we'll keep an eye out for sure. A lot of different pieces there. And that's kind of what it's all about. It's putting something together and making it worth more than the sum of its parts, in a sense.
Going back to your earlier question, I might add, if this is about growing companies, and True is a perfect example of growing companies and creating jobs. And that's something we've clearly done with that portfolio business.
So your firm has been an investor for many years, and it's known for taking an active role in operating improvements at your portfolio companies. How has your investment and due diligence approach evolved over time? Are there things you are paying special attention to as the economy rebounds from COVID?
Sure. In the early years, and this is going back, 30 some odd years ago, I would say that we got into the operational side of the business, and I started doing a lot of that early in my career at Linkature, is going around fixing problems. And it was sort of playing defense. I'd say in the last decade, we've really been playing much more offense. It's all about identifying initiatives to grow businesses and then getting involved with creating a sense of immediacy around those initiatives, and then managing, together with the management of the portfolio companies, a way to complete those initiatives and complete them in a timely fashion.
So in terms of trends around COVID right now, is there anything you're sort of keeping an eye on? There's definitely some moves in private equity to kind of take a look at some of these businesses that may have been downtrodden, but there might be bouncing back now. Or how is that affecting your deal making right now?
Steve, it's very interesting because it's a sort of a double-edged thing. There are some companies who have received what we call a COVID bump. So you may be paying off artificially inflated earnings. So you have to be very careful there. And there are other companies where you're not quite sure if it's a COVID bump or there's been a systemic shift. Maybe more people will be working remotely. Maybe more people have moved to the countryside or the suburbs. So being able to understand how that plays out is important in terms of the buy side. And clearly, we've seen many, many companies, many of our portfolio companies that have actually done extremely well in COVID. And it's definitely something that needs to be looked at carefully.
Well, one of the things that's kind of interesting about Linkature is that you did this investment in Barrier Technologies. It's a hospital fire safety door company. Tell me about that business and why was it so attractive to your firm?
Sure. And Steve, that again dovetails with your last question, which is the Barrier was actually hurt by COVID because what their business is they primarily serve hospitals and they provide inspection and repair work for fire doors, fire dampers, and fire barriers. During COVID, it was very difficult, obviously, to get into the hospitals. In fact, hospitals weren't allowing contractors to come in for months on end. So the business did suffer a bit. However, we knew it was a great business model. First of all, it provided a terrific service, safety for patients and staff of hospitals. The presumption is with patients that they can't be moved. And so the interior of these hospitals has to be as safe as possible. We found that many hospitals have over 1,000 fire doors, so there's a tremendous amount of work, and inspections occur annually and sometimes even more frequently than that. And the result of that is that there's a good recurring revenue base with this company. So very, very exciting investment. It's run by three equal partners, very dynamic team. So we really are excited about the prospects for Barrier.
So you're seeing some possibility for acquisitions for the company?
Yes, we have a list already of more than 14 potential acquisitions. In fact, tomorrow I have a call with an acquisition, which we think would be a perfect fit for the business.
Okay, well, best of luck with that. So middle market private equity continues to be competitive and attractive to the likes of Dyal and others. Dyal is a company, is an investor that actually buys stakes in private equity firms. Would Linkature ever consider selling a stake to the firm to somebody like that? And are there any new business lines you're considering, such as a SPAC or maybe launching a credit fund?
Well, over the years, we've had many opportunities brought to us, but we thought it was important to sort of stick to our knitting and stay focused. As we discussed earlier, we've always stayed in the middle market. We think we're a strong firm in the middle market, and the tendency here is to kind of stick with our knitting. With regard to investors in Lincolnshire, I don't think any of us have seen the need. We've got a great team here. Many of our senior people have been here for 20 years, and they started out as analysts or associates. And so there's a lot of depth to the team and a lot of continuity to the team. So we haven't really seen a need for any third-party financing.
So TJ definitely mentioned a lot of investments in sports. Are you a sports person, or is there another fun fact about you that you'd want to share?
Well, I guess my first response to that was maybe the fun fact is I'm devoid of a sense of humor, but since you can't see me on video, you probably won't buy that. But I think one of the things is in the world of bone fishing, I'm known for never having caught a bonefish, despite the fact having attempted to do it hundreds of times. So that's my great accomplishment in the sporting world.
Okay, so you like bone fishing. Are you a golfer too?
Yes, I am a golfer. I also like to cycle. And I've sort of enjoyed all sports, although I will say that one of my primary interests with leisure time is reading. And that's something that's been very fortunate that provides me with a lot of pleasure.
Well, that's great. That's great. So where do you think Lincolnshire is headed the next few years? Seems like you're going to be sticking to your core buyouts practice. No new huge product launches ahead. So any new types of businesses you might be looking at, or you're just going to be focusing on the core types of deals you've already been doing?
Well, as we discussed earlier, we have very, very robust sourcing capabilities, and we're in the process of investing our existing fund, and we've made 3 platform investments in that fund, and we have many, many opportunities we're looking at. So we are very active in the market, and we're very active looking at businesses to buy at the moment.
Okay, TJ Maloney, thank you for joining us, Chairman and CEO of Lincolnshire Management.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
This is Steve Gelsey with Behind the Buyouts. Thanks for joining us.